Join us for the Criterion Institute podcast as Joy Anderson, a global thought leader in business and social change, leads us through a series of discussions, interviews, frameworks, rants, and reframes that will help you better understand how to use finance as a tool for transformative systems change.
I am Joy Anderson, and this is the Criterion Institute podcast. A few years ago, Criterion launched a 10-year strategic plan, which solidified our commitment to direct the power of the financial system to be a positive force against systemic injustice. You're joining us for part three of a five-part series on the core pillars of our 2020 to 2030 strategic plan. Each episode will give you an inside look on how these pillars came into focus for our organization, why it is so important for us to do this work now and over the long term, key partners who are working with us, and highlights of our impact to date. This week, we'll dive into financing the reduction of gender-based violence. The goal of this pillar is to enable social change organizations, governments, and investors to design and implement strategies that effectively use finance to reduce gender-based violence. First, we'll look at how we ended up focusing on gender-based violence. Why did Criterion choose to focus on this topic? Next, we'll hear about a partnership with InFaith, in part because of my role on their board, and how they designed a first-of-its-kind portfolio explicitly focused on reducing gender-based violence. This segment was recorded at Convergence Conference in 2021. Finally, I talk about the intersectionality of GBV and how framing the issue of gender-based violence requires a balance between simplicity and complexity and the need for accessible ways to engage different audiences. Enjoy. One of the pillars of Criterion's strategic plan focuses on gender-based violence. The goal is for social change organizations, governments, and investors to design and implement strategies that effectively use finance to reduce gender-based violence. This commitment came together in 2017. So the first thread is that I had sat on the board of an organization, a foundation, InFaith Foundation, is the community foundation of Thrivent Financial, $700 million under management. And we had been moving towards sustainable investing. And in that, we're deepening our outreach to the women who were donors to the fund. And their interest, their stated interest, was to address domestic violence as a core priority. And so the foundation started to explore how could we design a investment approach to addressing domestic violence, carved out $10 million, and began a design process. Right at the end of that, or sort of toward the middle of that design process, we partnered with InFaith, Criterion partnered with InFaith to bring together an event actually hosted at Futures Without Violence. This was a remarkable event. It was a day with a whole host, Goldman Sachs, a whole host of different investment managers, and some women's rights, sort of particularly funders and philanthropists, but about 50 people came together for a day. And I honestly felt like we went from zero to 60 in one day, imagining how it was possible to address gender-based violence with finance. It was palpable in that room that investment managers could see the possibilities, that they could imagine how this could work. I traveled to Fiji to host a workshop with a set of women's rights organizations. And it was an amazing gathering of organizations who were looking at exploring their power to influence finance and to use finance to advance the issues that they were working on. And the focus of the 4 days was on gender-based violence. And what they named that inspired me to no end was this idea of how would we actually name what would be different if gender-based violence was reduced. So a host in a gathering with Futures Without Violence and In Faith Foundation showing the possibilities at the same time that these sort of grassroots women's rights organizations are saying, hey, this might actually be useful to us.
Hello. It's so great to have the five of us back together. It feels like the band's back together after all this time working. So maybe can you start us off and tell us the story of how all this started?
Sure, I'd be happy to. It's great to be back with the band. I have not seen these women in person since I left the foundation, which is the same time COVID set in. So I'm really delighted to see their faces virtually. I had the privilege to serve as president of In Faith for 25 years. It's an organization that's now led by Mandy Tuong, who's also a great supporter and now a part of this circle. But I think for me, what's interesting about this portfolio is it was such a natural evolution that it never felt like it was a bold statement. It came so much and grew so organically out of what we're doing that each step along the way seemed like the next logical step to take. And it really started 15 years ago when we surveyed all of the donors to the foundation, and we are a collection of individual donor advised funds, asking all of them what they believe are the most pressing concerns in our shared community. And it shouldn't have been a surprise, but it was, that gender-based violence and child abuse emerged as one of the most important issues for all of these donors, who are quite demographically diverse, people from cities, small towns, rural areas, who shouted, it felt, to us that something needed to be done here. So 15 years ago, we started down a path that began with grant making. And we convened a group of both faith-based and secular organizations to try to get a sense for what was missing and where we could lean in to this cause. And so we started with grant making, and we continued the conversation. And along the way, I'd say we kept on being challenged to do more. And some of those voices came from outside, some came from inside. Joy, serving on our board at the time, was one of those internal voices. Her mother, Phyllis Anderson, was another provocative voice, who at the time was leading a Lutheran seminary in Berkeley, who kept on leaning in and challenging us to do more and more and think more expansively about what was possible. Along the way, we built our first impact portfolio within the foundation. And that took 5 years of conversation. And it was at a time where there weren't the choices we have today. And it was an interesting conversation for us because we're a very diverse Christian charity that don't come to agreement on all social issues. So we had to think about ways in which we could come to a common agreement on issues that all made sense to us without sort of tweaking, you know, our neighbors. And so we came up with a portfolio, and this was working with Cambridge Associates that felt sort of new and early on, but it was exciting for us. And along the way, we discovered that we didn't have to give up anything on performance on our impact portfolio versus our mainstream portfolio. And that gave us confidence. It gave us great joy. And it was a great story to tell our donors that you can both be an investor and a grant maker and create change. And in many ways, what you can do as an investor works and pulls levers on strategies that grantmaking can't touch. And so it allowed us to move into some new territory. The conversations continued. We realized quickly, and there was a lot of data to support it, that 2/3 of all charitable decisions in this country are made by women, that increasingly women controlled the majority of capital in the country. And for a foundation such as ours, where 2/3 of the gifts come at the end of life, women live longer than men, and they have the last word when it comes to bequests and beneficiary interests. So women became more central, not only as grant makers, but as leaders within the foundation. And then we started to think about ways in which we could be more intentional about giving women their due when it comes to their voice and their dollars. And that's when we started to look at the possibility of creating an investment pool that would focus on women, and certainly in many ways it's a women's empowerment portfolio, but very tactically look at those areas that destabilize women and make them more vulnerable to gender-based violence. And we're not subject matters in that area, but we gathered good people and smart voices to help us determine what were the ways in which we could move into the territory that looked at issues such as access to capital, that looked at job creation, that looked at education, that looked at some less likely candidates like public transportation. And it's that was the moment where, working with Joy at the time, we looked to create an RFP that would help us identify people who had the capacity to do this. Darcy, during this time, came on the board and brought another intelligent, experienced voice and someone who works full time in the impact investment space. And so that kept the energy moving within the organization. And then we discovered Veris along the way, that made the short list of people that mostly Joy believed had either done this work right, or had the capacity to do it. And so that's probably a natural point to tip it over to Darcy, Allison, to talk about what happened next.
Sure. You know, one of the things that I think the best stories that came out of this experience was we'd sent the RFP out to 9 or 10 different parties to respond. We brought all the responses back, checked all the boxes to analyze it, and decided that there were 2 or 3 finalists that we were really interested in. But the leader of the pack, the response that was the most spot on most of the time, was a firm that we ended up not selecting, as Chris, the lone male on the team of 3 of us, noticed that there is not one woman in their senior management positions. And it was just, of course, that we can't pick them. And Veris had such a great response as well. And they are very creative. And we knew that they would take it that extra mile to do the kinds of creative investments that we were looking for.
So just to be clear for those of you who are listening, right? So just get all these players, right? Darcy's at the foundation in the chair of the investment committee at this time. And Ellen and Allison came in as advisors to design the portfolio, but then they had to choose the managers that would actually invest the portfolio. So for those of you who all of these layers in finance are not necessarily your first language. LM.
Yeah, thank you. I'm so excited to be here, join you all. We know how to design portfolios. We can do this. So, 2013, 2015, we came out with a series of, papers, about gender lens investing. But even having that background, I have to say, I was just blown away when InFaith sent us the RFP, because the audacity of this thought leadership was really striking to me. And I was already a converted, impact investor and advisor. But InFaith was modeling, you know, to the investing ecosystem, this kind of, you know, bold thinking that we shouldn't settle, you know, for the traditional approaches. And so, you know, here was the possibility of targeting this, you know, social kind of health, public health pandemic in a way that was very intentional. And I remember thinking, oh my gosh, can we do that? You know, is that possible? And then this, of course, you know, and why not? And so it was really this terrific example of pushing not just the edge of an envelope, but an edge of an envelope we didn't even know we had, you know, to push against. So I think, and then I remember the impact on the managers. First, their blood raised from their face because this is a big, unusual challenge. But then the wheels start moving and you realize we've got to have a revolution in metrics here. Like, what are we counting as important? What's a measurable investment, you know, data point? And so, and then of course, going to different managers and having them realize, well, you know, we are already providing services for the survivors of domestic violence. And now we can shine a spotlight on it. Now we can elevate it. So they became part, you know, of that ecosystem that was raising up a new way to invest.
Chris, any final word back from you?
I would say the success of this process has been about the team. It's been an extraordinary group of team members that started with our donors and their sense of living with a sense of possibility, that they wanted to create positive change. That inspired us. And the women on this call, you know, represent people who have a great deal of discipline and experience, and yet live with wild imaginations. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad that, Allison, you brought up the point of spreading joy and changing lives, which is central to the mission of the organization, because we came to this and continue with it, with an expectation that we live in the light rather than the dark. And I think this is a topic that can be ponderous, that is serious, and yet to approach it with a sense of possibility makes all of the difference. And I think all of us have challenged each other in this process. And I think there's been an evolution in the process from Joy serving as the chair of the investment committee to Darcy, who brought different skills. And now with my departure and Mandy Twong coming with different skills than I had, to continue the evolution and to keep moving this forward with new ideas. So there's absolutely nothing static about it. And that is because of the team members who have been assembled.
I'll say thank you so much for taking the time out of your insanely busy schedules to do this. And I hope you enjoyed this great story of these amazing men and women moving this forward.
Thank you, Joy.
I was watching a truly silly movie the other day. The basic premise was that a famous author had tried to write a book in a different genre that was crossing genres, and that was sort of, and the whole premise is that he should get more attention for this. But what he kept demanding was shelf space, right? He wanted, his book editor said, you have to have a category to be on a shelf. And he was, in his bold way, saying that they should build a new shelf for him. So I feel like we wrestle with this a lot in a lot of our work, right? It doesn't clearly sit on one shelf. And in our work on gender-based violence, I felt that most acutely. In part because the research on gender-based violence and advocacy around gender-based violence is a relatively new field, 30 or 40 years old. And it's defining itself. It's playing with language in a lot of different ways. But it also, so one, as a field in formation, the language is appropriately contested.
And the other piece is it's intersectional, right? It overlaps, gender-based violence overlaps with violence. It also overlaps with gender equality. And so one of the reasons we chose working on gender-based violence was that it was an issue related to equity, justice, gender norms, structural inequities that would allow us to go deep. And the deeper we went, the more facets emerged. And the more ways people said to us how we should define those facets. So we're discovering these facets and we're testing them in different audiences, and people are telling us how we should talk about this. I've actually never gotten so much advice about how I should talk about something as working on gender-based violence. My most classic moment was talking to a manager of a very large pension fund who said, wouldn't it be more helpful, maybe a bigger category, to not call it gender-based violence, but to call it sexual harassment? I think that would be a more overarching category. Now, in that case, that was a more palatable category for him, and he didn't like the word violence. So that's one intersection. The second is gender-based violence as a form of violence, right? The thing you learn is gender-based violence, sexual assault, it's not about sex, it's about power, it's about the violence. Well, that overlaps 100% with racial violence, religious violence against religious groups, any ways that we are using violence to ensure that people know their place. And so another way to frame this is to say, let's think about this as violence holistically and really address it that way. In one of our first meetings on gender-based violence, somebody approached me and said that this would be more useful if we made the whole issue about gun control, because gun control is arguably, he's not crazy, but gun control would substantially reduce domestic violence, as many deaths caused by domestic violence are through the use of firearms. And so as we flip-flop this around and say, how do we introduce this topic? How do we, our goal was to find a way to prove that you could finance the reduction of gender-based violence. The first campaign that was really launched around this, the first fund that was built around this, was tied to domestic violence. Well, domestic violence is a somewhat more unifying idea. Gender-based violence more broadly brings in a broader set of issues within political divides. Domestic violence is often thought of as an issue that should be addressed. The other piece that it overlaps, gender-based violence, then overlaps child abuse. And so seeing the ways in which family violence is not just women, but children and men sometimes, but more often women and children. So there is a richness of intersectionality. There are positively many different possibilities for framing, but there is the challenge of focus. How, if you want to galvanize around a specific part of this, is that worth doing? Or will that leave too many other pieces on the table? On the flip side, if you look at its full intersectionality, have you just basically declared that any form of structural inequity is wrong? Mm-hmm. So there's a challenge of focus, and there's the risk of reduction. And so somewhere in the end here, we need to balance simplicity and complexity
We need to have framing that's flexible. We need to change the frame to be able to talk to different people. As we're building a campaign looking at gender-based violence and finance, we don't really have the luxury to look at only one topic, only one angle on gender-based violence, because our role is to build the interest overall. So we've landed on no one size fits all approach, probably no big catalyzing campaign around a single issue, but we maintain the balancing act between honoring the complexity and finding accessible ways in. I think you all work on topics like this, right? It's just a Rubik's Cube that's spinning in your head all the time. What if I approached it this way? What if I framed it this way? Would I get a different reach if I turned it upside down? In the end, we just need to keep talking.
To learn more about our work, visit us at criterioninstitute.org. And if you're enjoying this podcast, please leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Your reviews help our podcast reach a wider audience. Thanks for listening.